The Corleone Men's Choir with that Norwegian piece of music from their Yuletide Fires recording, the classic music of Christmas. Here on the New Classical FM, my name is Mark Wigmore. Let's get to our daily look at arts and culture. The Song of Names is a new film by director Francois Gerard, producer Robert Lantos, and composer Howard Shore. It stars Clive Owen and Tim Roth. Here's a moment.
My dearest brother, from the depths of my soul, I must ask you not to find me. You must think of me now as dead.
I'm looking for David Rappaport.
Rappaport, R-A-P-R-T.
Would have been here in the 1950s.
He was a virtuoso.
When was the last time you saw him?
London. Takes the violin right out of my hands. Never heard nothing like it in your life.
In The Song of Names, we follow Martin and Dovidal. Martin is the son of arts-loving British parents and Dovidal, a young Polish violin virtuoso who's given the opportunity to move to London to study music while his family and community suffers the scourge of the Nazis during the Second World War. The two boys basically become brothers, and we follow them into their 20s. The night of Dovidal's debut recital, something quite dramatic happens, and I won't give it away. But we rejoin actor Tim Roth portraying Martin as a grown man and looking for clues to his family's past. The story, soaked in violin music, finds its dramatic center with the haunting effects of the unknown. In the case of Dovidal, he simply doesn't know what has happened to his Jewish family back in Poland, suffering the Nazi invasion. Francois Gerard directs, you'll remember his work from another film that centers around the instrument, The Red Violin, the Oscar Award-nominated and winning Canadian co-production. The legendary Howard Shore, who will be a guest with me tomorrow, is the composer of the film's score. The producer is a man who needs little introduction, Robert Lantos. Over the last 40 years, he's transformed the film landscape in this country, starting with films like In Praise of Older Women and The Agency, and then into major works like The Black Robe, A Rich Relationship with Adam Egoyan and David Cronenberg, and the award-winning Mordecai Richler tale, Barney's Version. I sat down with Robert Lantos yesterday to talk about this latest film. We met at his Serendipity Point Film Studio office. Robert Lantos, welcome to the New Classical FM. Great to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Why this story? What spoke to you to say, I want people to see The Song of Names?
Well, first I read the novel by Norman Lebrecht, who I'm sure you know of. He's one of the world's most distinguished classical music scholars.
Yeah.
In some circles, his name is received with fear and trembling.
Right.
And I was taken by the story of this book, but a good story, certainly at my stage of life and career, is not enough of a reason to make a film. There are a lot of good stories. This particular good story had something else within it that I found irresistibly compelling, and that was that in this story about friendship and betrayal and reconciliation set in the world of classical music, there was a way that Norman Lebrecht provided the reader with of remembering the genocidal horror of the Holocaust and without actually visiting the events themselves. And he did that by creating this, what we call the Song of Names, so that through a piece of music, which reveals the actual mystery of this story. It is where, through this piece of music, that the revelations come as to what happened to one of our two protagonists, mm-hmm. who disappears on the eve of his first solo concert. What happened to him and why? I found that so intriguing because I thought it would give me an opportunity to remember and to give others a way of remembering something that must never be forgotten, because the only way we can avoid the tragedies of the past is by never forgetting them. It was remembering, but a way of remembering that had not been done before in any film I'd ever seen, that intrigued me. And so But that's further compounded by the environment in which we live today. And perhaps I would have been less compelled 25 years ago. But
yeah.
Today we, I am the son of two Holocaust survivors. I grew up with the story of the Holocaust pretty much from my mother's milk.
Your parents were comfortable talking about it. I mean, some parents weren't comfortable talking about it.
Mine were.
Yeah.
My other members of my family were not, but my parents were. And it was assumed by those who lived through all that and those who are the descendants of survivors that what led to the mass murder of 6 million Jews was something of the past, that it could never happen again, and that lesson had been learned forever and ingrained forever in the collective memory of humankind. That turned out to be false optimism. And as Jew hatred has been sweeping across Europe now for the past couple of decades and gathering more momentum each day, and it has leapfrogged across the Atlantic and is certainly, and it's a cancer that's spreading on most campuses across North America. So that's the environment in which we live today, and because of that, and specifically because of that, I feel motivated to do whatever I can, which is not very much, but I do have some resources and some skills, and so I'm not limited to making donations to Jewish organizations. I can be more useful by making a film that hopefully will reach a significant number of people, and through a well-told tale and emotionally compelling tale, remind people where the road of hatred leads.
So we've got violin music, jumping through time and location, great cast, Francois Girard, an outstanding score. I think you can see where I'm going here. If we like the Oscar award-winning film, The Red Violin, this is, I would say, something of a companion piece. I mean, it deals with classical music and so on and so forth, but very much its own story and lives in its own world, even though there may be some comparisons, even great stars. You must have looked at that former film and thought, okay, we've got a lot of the same ingredients here.
Well, there are two people who... really three people who were the essential architects of this film. After I read the book, I then discovered there had been a screenplay adaptation of it written by Jeffrey Kane, who's an Oscar-nominated screenwriter. And I then got a hold of the rights to the screenplay, and first the book, then the script. And then I sent it to Francois Girard. The reason why was because I'd never worked with Francois. I knew him, but... yes, he directed The Red Violin and also 32 short films about Glenn Gould. And
he had his classical chops.
And
together,
he
sure.
is as comfortable in the world of the opera and as he is in the world of film. He was the one person I actually knew, one filmmaker I knew, who is equally at home in the language of classical music as he is in the language of cinema. So he just was simply the first person that came to mind as I was... reading this. So I called Francois, I sent it to him to read, and he was as enthusiastic as I was. The third, absolutely crucial to this enterprise, was Howard Shore. Because this central component of this film, this piece of music called The Song of Names, that didn't actually exist. It was a line in the book and a line in the script. It says, and then he performs The Song of Names. But there was no such thing as The Song of Names.
Mm-hmm.
Howard began working on the score for this film almost 2 years before we actually made the film, which is the exact reverse of how it usually works.
Right.
The composer tends to be the last one in, but not this time. The fundamental pieces of music for this film were written and orchestrated and recorded before the film was made. It's really a testament to the true brilliance and greatness of Howard Shore that he created the wings upon which this story flies. And literally, he gave the story its wings.
He's going to be a guest on the program tomorrow, and so we're so thrilled to have him. And one of the elements that I really love is him you've got these violin solos that are happening throughout the film, and then he actually works the score to sort of underscore, you know, these violin recitals and so on. It's quite beautiful, and I think quite an accomplishment musically.
François Gérard also had a lot to do with this, because they worked together very closely and collaborated. And occasionally they would give me a peek of what they were doing. And sometimes I'd get impatient and say, okay, it's time for me to hear it before we started making the film.
Right.
And then they would say, well, we're still working on it, wait a little while. And then one day I heard the first version. Eventually it was refined, but the first version of the central piece of music of the Song of Names. And I cried, which is not something I do often.
No.
At least, not if I can help it. But when I heard it, I had tears in my eyes. And I knew, okay, this is going to work.
Clive Owen, Tim Roth, I mean, both great actors. And I don't think we've seen them quite like this in a film before. Somewhat understated. We're not seeing Tim Roth, you know, dealing with a bullet in his gut or something like that. These are stretches for these guys, and they allowed them to kind of...
Very much so. I mean, we went to Clive first for the role of Dovidal, even though Dovidal is not in the entire film. Tim Roth's role is much larger. I mean, it takes more screen time. But we went to Clive first, and he asked us, why are you coming to me with this role instead of, why aren't you casting the other role first? And so Francois and I said, well, because this is a story of looking for Dovidal. The violin prodigy who disappears on the eve of his first concert. And so, well, I won't give away more of the story, but we said to Clive, you are the one we're looking for. It's got to be worth our while. And he, you know, he took on this role. He had never played any character, you know, remotely like this. It's certainly a stretch in terms of who he is in real life, which is what acting is. He's a great actor, and that's why he took it on. Because he'd never done anything like this. In the case of Tim Roth, who we went to next for the role of Martin, see, Tim Roth usually plays, as you just said, he's got either a bullet in him or he's putting a bullet in someone else.
That's right. He can be a real tough guy.
Absolutely, or sure. he's trying to rob Sam Jackson at a diner in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
but he usually plays very edgy characters, and I have to give credit Francois with this more than myself. Francois was convinced that we needed to cast an actor who has the edge that Tim Roth has, the absolute sort of built-in a time bomb that could explode at any time, that. Because Martin was actually a passive character in our story, he is subordinate to the alpha male Dovidal, that we wanted an actor who had that edge in order to keep that, to make that the passive observer into someone who was truly interesting. And then, when he does explode, and that's all I'll say about that, however brief it might be, it's memorably powerful.
Sure is. I was frightened in that moment, to be sure. It is a great achievement. I think you put a wonderful group together to make it. It is out on Christmas Day, The Song of Names. Really great to spend some time with you today, and thanks again.
You're really good at what you do. It was a pleasure being here.